This episode of Felon may contain disturbing content, including descriptions of violence and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
Christmas Day for most is a time to gather and share with loved ones, to open gifts, to eat, drink, and create lifelong memories. It is a time of the year that we reflect on the past and we look forward with hope to a new year. But for the Nonnenmarke family, Christmas Day will forever be the day that they are reminded that a precious loved one was brutally taken from them. The Nonnenmarkers are well established in the central western New South Wales city of Orange, is a place that as a family they have called home for over a century. With these deep roots, Orange has been a place that they have felt connected to and a community that they have felt safe within. Deanne Louise Nonnenmarke was born on the 4th of January, 1972. In 1990, she was 18 and living with her family and working as a trainee chef at the Robin Hood Hotel in Orange. She had shared with her family her dreams for the future and looked forward to the day that she could work as a chef on a cruise liner. On Christmas Day of 1990, like many families, the Nonnenmarkers gathered together to celebrate with a Christmas lunch. But little did her family know that this would be the last time that they would see their beloved Deanne. By Boxing Day, Deanne's family had not heard from her and made repeated attempts to reach out. Feeling uneasy about her sudden disappearance and lack of contact, they soon reported her missing at the Orange police station. News spread throughout Orange of Deanne's disappearance, and search parties set out to scour surrounding areas and places that she was known to frequent. Friends and colleagues were contacted, but with no success. Some friends of Deanne's even volunteered to join police and family members in their efforts in their relentless search. These searches would last for 2 days, as family and friends anxiously waited to hear from Deanne or find a trace of her whereabouts. During these 2 days, there was nothing. All attempts to track her down proved futile. It soon seemed that either she did not want to be found, or that she had been the victim of something sinister. In tracing Deanne's last known movements, police had focused their attention on a Jonathan Davison. Jonathan was Deanne's colleague and friend, who worked with her at the Robin Hood Hotel. Jonathan, like Deanne, was a trainee chef. The two had met as colleagues, but soon started to get along and would socialise with each other outside of work hours. Jonathan had been an enthusiastic member of the search team and, being familiar with Deanne's usual movements, offered a number of suggestions of where he thought would be worthwhile places to look. Searches soon turned to a state forest, some 13 kilometres from Orange, near the Mount Cunobulus region. Due to the distance from the city, it was not initially an obvious place to start looking, but it was among a number of places that Jonathan had suggested. With no other leads to go on, a search of the area commenced, as the forest of the mountain region was searched by friends, family, and concerned community members. None would be prepared for what they would soon find. It was the partner of Deanne's sister, Tanya, that made a discovery that all close to her had dreaded. Upon searching a 44-gallon steel drum, the partially burnt body of Deanne was located. A post-mortem revealed that she had suffered a violent death with signs of sexual mutilation. It was revealed that Jonathan had been the last person to see Deanne. Following the Christmas lunch with her family, Deanne visited with Jonathan at his home. The two had developed a friendship during their time working together, and he had invited her over for a quiet game of Cluedo. Deanne had accepted. With this information coming to light, Jonathan was a significant person of interest. It would only be a matter of time before police would question him and he would disclose the disturbing details of Deanne's final moments. While at his apartment, Jonathan had tried to make sexual advances towards Deanne, and she had rejected him. Following this rejection, Jonathan snapped and launched into a savage assault, the results of which were multiple fractures to the skull, bruising to the head, strangulation marks, and a stab wound in the back. It was also determined that prior to her death, Deanne had been sexually assaulted, the extent of which was too graphic to be reported. Following her violent demise at his hands, Jonathan drove her body to the mountain region of the Cunnabula State Forest, stuffed her body in a steel bin, and attempted to burn it. It would not be long before he too would join the search party and offer suggestions for places to search. It has been implied that he wanted to be in the search party when Deanne's body was discovered, in an attempt to create an alibi. Jonathan made a full confession to police, but refused to admit that there was anything sexual in nature involved during the attack, even though forensic evidence would prove to the contrary. In 1992, Jonathan Davison pled guilty to the callous murder of Deanne. During sentencing, Justice Wood told Katoomba Supreme Court that Davison's crime had been one of the utmost viciousness and gravity. Jonathan Davison was sentenced to a maximum jail term of 20 years and 5 months, with a minimum period of 13 years and 5 months to be served prior to applying for parole. This minimum time expired in 2006, and Davison made an application for parole. His initial application was denied due to his refusal to take part in a program called Custody-Based Intensive Treatment Program. This program is specifically directed to individuals who have been identified as sex offenders. His reason for refusing to take part in the course was that he did not perceive the attack on Deanne as sexual, and that he feared the stigmatism and reprisals in jail if he were to be labelled a sex offender. At each parole review, Deanne's family shared their reluctance that a killer such as Davison should be released. On one occasion, via video link, with Davison listening with his head dropped, Mark Heavers, Deanne's brother-in-law, stated the following on behalf of her family. "We have lost our chance to see Deanne achieve her goals, fulfill her potential, to have a family of her own, and live a happy life, destroyed by the actions of one person, being Jonathan Davison. Davison had the audacity to sign up and be part of the search party. He suggested places for the police to look, and wanted to be there when Deanne's body was located, furthering his plan to secure an airtight alibi. How sickening. This shows the manipulative and macabre nature, as well as the mindset of a calculated killer who feels he is ready to adapt to a life of lawful responsibility and to be trusted to live outside the correction system." In 2012, after having 5 parole applications denied and just 10 months short of the full sentence that was imposed, Jonathan Davison was granted parole and walked free from Long Bay Jail. Davison was photographed by the waiting media. In this photo, he can be seen smirking and giving a thumbs up. At no point during his trial or time in jail did Jonathan Davison express remorse towards Deanne's family. As he walked from the gates of Long Bay Jail to the car of waiting relatives, a reporter asked him how he felt following his release. He replied, "Excellent. Thanks very much." As the years have passed, the non-unmarkers have struggled to come to terms with the loss of Deanne. Over the years, the family has posted many memoriams to Deanne, expressing this sentiment. One reads, "There's a place in our hearts, which is yours alone. A piece of our lives no one could ever own. Deep within us, your memory is kept. We love you so dearly, Deanne, to ever forget."
Felon, true crime, the underbelly of the land down under.